Chapter 9, The Reward. Wealth is a tool that gives you choices, but it can't compensate for a life not fully lived. My father, Vernon Winfrey, graduated from Hazlabarber College in 1963. After working a year and a half as an apprentice, he opened his own barbershop in Nashville, where he's been a local fixture for the past 53 years. Before entering the barber college, he served in the Army and held several other jobs, including as a janitor at Vanderbilt University. Both my mother, Vernita, and grandmother, Hattie Mae, were housekeepers. I was raised knowing the value of a hard day's work, and from an early age, I've always known I was responsible for myself. Where I came from, there was no backup plan or safety net. For better or worse, you made your own way. My first job was at 15 as a babysitter, making 50 cents an hour. The children were a handful, and the lady of the house always made sure to leave a big pile of clothes in her bedroom for me to clean up. Like clockwork, just before she left, she would turn to me and ask if I would mind tidying things up. When she came home and neglected to give me anything extra for cleaning, I understood very well that this woman didn't value my efforts. But I did. I valued my work and myself. And I decided that no matter how much or how little money I made, I would never let that define my worth. That babysitting job taught me my first valuable lesson about money. I am not my salary. I gave up babysitting and moved on to stocking shelves in a local store for $1.50 an hour. The pay was better, but I was not allowed to speak to the customers. As I mentioned in Chapter 4, I was known as a talking child, so this was clearly not a good fit. I knew having a job where I had to stay silent was no way to earn a paycheck. It felt like a betrayal of myself, and even at 15, I was not willing to do that. The experience turned out to be another life lesson. Sometimes knowing what you don't want is as valuable as knowing what you do. Eventually, I moved on to work for my father in his corner grocery store connected to the barbershop. I worked behind the counter selling penny candy. He didn't pay me, but I was allowed to talk. You could even say that the camaraderie in the barbershop and store explains why, years later, it felt so natural to be among the Oprah Show audience listening to stories. I was still in high school when I was offered a job as a newsreader at the local radio station. They paid me $100 a week. That was a lot of money for a 17-year-old, but I would have done it for free. It felt like the perfect fit. Lesson number 3, know the joy of doing what you love and never stop pursuing it. All these years later, I'm still keenly aware that I am not my salary. I give thanks every day for having the opportunity not only to make a living, but to create what I see as an exquisite life. And I know that everyone needs a source of income in order to survive. But I've come to believe that one of the reasons I've enjoyed financial success is because my focus has never been on money. As you experience these words of wisdom, my hope is that you will begin to develop a new measure for true success. For me, the great reward is the feeling of lasting contentment and self-respect that comes when you're living out the truth of who you are. One of the most memorable examples of the dangers of allowing material achievement to dictate self-worth is the story of author Sarah von Braunick. I've said for years that Sarah's best-selling book, Simple Abundance, is the reason I started keeping a gratitude journal. It changed the way I moved through the world. Simple Abundance sold 7 million copies. And before she knew it, Sarah was a multimillionaire. As a bona fide publishing superstar, she hired 9 assistants, brought home 8 pairs of Manolo Blahnik shoes in one trip, and bought the actual chapel once owned by Sir Isaac Newton. But 15 years later, Sarah joined me for a moving conversation in which she courageously shared the story of how she lost it all and what she eventually gained in return. What I learned from Sarah and so many others is that the way people handle money reflects the way they see themselves. Many times when people win the lottery and experience a windfall, they don't see themselves as worthy of their newfound riches. they wind up spending on possessions to create an idea of self-worth. When you've become blinded by the status symbols, it's easy to lose sight of the unique gifts only you can offer the world. What I know for sure is that no matter how much wealth you come to possess, everything passes and changes with time. What is real, what is forever, is who you are and what you're meant to share with the world. That is your true treasure. Let's start with more of my conversation with Sarah von Braunek.
I was number one for almost a year.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was on there for like 119 weeks.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
It is amazing. But what I wanted to share with you, and I've never shared because you don't get much sympathy for this, the Wednesday that there was no call. Oh, that's sort of strange.
We haven't heard from the New York Times today.
We haven't heard. They haven't called. And so I called my agent. I said, I haven't heard anything. She said, you're not on the list this week.
How was that?
I cried.
How was that after 119 weeks?
I cried. Yeah. And I thought, no one in the world will understand what this feels like. The only trouble with being number one is eventually you have to be number two, yeah, three, and four.
Because yeah, life moves on.
It does.
But hadn't you prepared yourself? One day you have to say, well, what's going to happen when that call doesn't come?
But I didn't.
You never did.
No. That's one of the lessons I wish I had realized. Mm. I wish I had learned that life is cyclical. Mm. Success goes in cycles.
The great Cicely Tyson has always known exactly who she is and what matters most.
When I read a script, either my skin tingles or my stomach churns. It's that simple. If my skin tingles, I know it's something that I must do. If my stomach churns, I know it is something that I cannot do. I have learned from every single character that I've played something, something emotionally, spiritually, and psychologically true. I've never done a job just for money. I could not do anything that would not enhance humanity, especially women. It's so easy when the money is flashed before you to allow that to govern your choices. I've never really worked for money. It's so important for me to have peace of mind, body, and soul than to have all the riches. When I put my head on my pillow at night, I don't require a drug, alcohol, or anything else, just fatigue.
Michael Bernard Beckwith.
Once you release your grasp, then you give up your resistance, and then that which is for you will come to you.
That's the aha moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when you want it, it doesn't show up.
Yeah, your message to the universe at that moment is, I want it, which is translating into, I don't have it. So you can't receive it.
So you end up blocking your own blessing.
Totally.
Here's Lynn Twist.
I've learned a great deal from the people I used to call poor and the people I used to call rich. And now I just realize we're all whole and complete people living in the ebb and flow of financial circumstances that change all the time, that do not define us.
I thought it was interesting how you talk about how we question everything else. We question race, religion, other life circumstances, but money, we just give it the power.
We've assigned it more power than human life. You know, we all know that's not true, but we live as if money's more important than anything else, and it gives us tremendous anxiety and suffering. When we're dealing on the playing field of money, somehow we drop all of this wonderful sense of value and worth and love and relationship that we have in the rest of life,
right,
and we become irritable and grumpy and greedy, and it's like there's different rules or something.
So you say in order to break that scarcity myth, there's not enough, we need to live in the place of sufficiency?
What I mean by sufficiency is a place of wholeness and completeness and deep understanding of who we are. And it's almost impossible to get to enoughness or sufficiency in a world that exalts scarcity. I call it the myth of scarcity. Mm-hmm. It's actually a mindset, an unconscious, unexamined set of assumptions that come before thinking, like a lens that we look through that has everything look like it's not enough. And we go through a day waking up in the morning, I didn't get enough sleep. Then looking at the clock, I don't have enough time. Then there's not enough of this. I don't have enough to wear. And every meeting, every conversation, everything is about what we don't have enough of. It's the siren song of a consumer culture. But it's not just about money. It dribbles over into
everything.
Aspect of life.
Yes, yes.
We actually start to have a deficit relationship with ourselves. It's not just there's not enough, it's not enough. It's I'm not enough. And that deficit relationship with ourselves is the source of so much of our suffering. And it comes, I think, from this unconscious, unexamined mindset.
And if you believe that and buy into that, then that's exactly what you will create.
Exactly. And it gives people permission, actually, to accumulate way more than they need out of the fear that they're not going to have enough.
Here is Jack Canfield.
I think the greatest wound we've all experienced is somehow being rejected for being our authentic self. And that as a result of that, we then try to be what we're not to get approval, love, protection, safety, mm-hmm. money, whatever. And that the real need for all of us is to reconnect with the essence of who we really are mm-hmm. and re-own all the disowned parts of ourselves, whether it's mm-hmm. our emotions, whether it's our spirituality. We all go around hiding parts of ourselves. And, you know, I was with a Buddhist teacher a number of years ago. We were co-leading a seminar, and he said at the end, he said, let me give you the secret. If you were to meditate for 20 years, this is where you'd finally get to. Just be yourself, but be all of you.
Here's Goldie Hawn.
The way I look at an award, it's a great thing to get looked and recognized for something that you've done. But it's a moment in time. Living off of those accolades and making that become the sum total and the part of your importance in life, or even your purpose in life, defining who you are. Those awards are never, they're wonderful. They're never going to define who you are. I define myself by my ability to give. I define myself by my ability to understand. I define myself by my ethics. And by my truth. These are the things that inform who I am, other than exterior moments that come and ebb and flow.
Jordan Peele experienced the kind of success people dream about. He shared how he works to stay focused on what really matters.
It was an article in Vanity Fair about Michael Jackson, and his friends were commenting saying he did Thriller and then spent the rest of his life chasing Thriller. So how do you now avoid the trap of your first film, first directing, first written, becomes this phenomenon?
Now that you mention it, I don't know. I don't. You know, I will continue to make the movies that I want to see first. If I want to see it, I have to have trust that other people will. And if they don't, I have to accept that that's what it is.
Yeah.
The biggest reward of all of this for me, besides this right here, has always been the fact that I get to make another movie. I don't want to let that become an unpleasant experience because this one was so successful.
Jeff Weiner reveals what failure taught him.
If that doesn't humble you, I don't know what is. Mm-hmm. So when you have those kinds of experiences, you realize how at times fleeting success can be, at least mm-hmm. traditional measures of success. You realize to some extent how beyond your control it is, mm-hmm. and you invest less in it in terms of the way you define yourself. success in terms of achieving objectives, in terms of manifesting a mission, in terms of manifesting a vision, that's all good, especially if what you can do can create good in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic. But to the extent you start to define yourself through traditional measures of success, to the extent that's your source of self-esteem, you are destined to be unhappy because you cannot control it.
Listen to how growing up in poverty helped shape Trevor Noah's perspective.
You know, my whole life, comedy has always been a tool that I have used to process pain. It's how my family communicated. It's one thing we had. We always laughed. And you've been to Soweto. You've seen how we live there. You know, the weird thing is when I always say to people, when you're poor, like being poor sucks. But being poor together makes it a lot better, right? Because you're in it together and you don't, it doesn't discount the fact that you don't have, but then you start to enjoy the things that you do have, and that is each other. And so we laughed, we enjoyed ourselves, we had something that sometimes you don't have when you have too much, and that is the ability to focus on the human beings around you.
And now, William Paul Young.
We live in this world where we're just all looking for more and more and more and more, and we're looking for more things to fill us up and more things to make us whole. But the opposite of more is enough.
Yes.
When is enough enough?
Yeah, well, that's a good question, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
As soon as you ask it, you're already thinking more.
Yeah.
And that really came to fruition in dealing with the loss of everything financial and all that. And when we lost everything, was dealing with a major fear. I can trace my journey on the issue of trust because that was so violated as a child that I had no inclination, let alone capacity, to trust anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And now, through these 11 years, I have all these men in my life that have really brought healing to my soul, right? Help rebuild the house on the inside. So I call them up and I say, look, I know you love us. Here's our financial situation. I know you love my family. Please, please, don't rescue me from this.
Don't rescue me from this?
Yeah, don't. Because when you run into these issues where fear has such a dominant place, you're either going to go to control or you're going to go to trust.
Yeah.
Right? And my whole thing, my whole life has been about control because I couldn't trust. So when I run into these things, it's like, how do I let go of control here? In this situation, it was, please don't rescue me from this because you're probably going to be interfering with what God is doing in my heart.
You let yourself fall?
Yeah.
You allowed yourself to fall.
I allowed myself to fall into trust. And that's when we learned that the opposite of more is enough.